Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. I'm Joe, your Casual Comics guy host, and today I've got Mark with me again. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Greetings and salutations, Joe.
Greetings and salutations to you, Mark. Live long and prosper.
That's right. Exactly.
So today, Mark and I are going to catch up a little bit on Loki. Season 2 has started. We're both a little bit behind, but we'll get you caught up on our thoughts. So we read a couple comic books this week to get in the spooky season. Yes. Werewolf by Night, one shot that came out a little over a month ago. And the brand new adventures, The Spine-Tingling Spider-Man.
Yes.
Scary stuff. So
not to be confused with Spider-Tingle, it's Spine-Tingling.
Spine-Tingling Spider-Man. You know, there's also another new, there's a book out. I just saw it today when I went to the comic shop. The Uncanny Spider-Man, which I'm interested in reading. It's Nightcrawler being Spider-Man, like in the main MCU, like whatever's going on with the downfall of Krakoa and the mutants. It seems like Kurt Wagner has left and has donned the guise of Spider-Man to prowl the streets.
But in the Munich circus, I'm known as Spider-Man.
Because he can stick to walls, right? We saw that in Giant Size X-Men number one. He just jumps up really high and he sticks to the wall. So he has wall crawling ability.
Does he? Or is his prehensile tail do the...
I don't think it's tail, but maybe he has nimble fingers. So he can get him in the cracks there.
Oh, my God.
Get his finger in the crack.
He can finger in the crack. I don't think he can wall crawl, Joe. We're going to have to fact check that.
I think he can stick to walls. Maybe.
Okay.
We'll check on it at one of our breaks. We'll come back. But Uncanny Spider-Man is another comic. We're not talking about that one today. We're talking about Spine-Tingling Spider-Man. But as we wrap up October here, we are also coming into the next big Marvel movie, The Marvels, starring Brie Larson and the rest of the crew. And I'm trying to avoid trailers. I don't know if you're trying to avoid spoilers, Mark, but
I am.
You think? Are you excited for the new Marvels movie?
Well, no.
That's a surprise to me, though, because you're excited for every Marvel movie.
I am. I'm excited for every one, and I feel bad that I'm not. Maybe it's, I don't know what it is. I was excited for Eternals, and I think that was, you know, it had the potential to be a lot. I don't know, Joe. It might be because I just didn't. It feels like they're trying to stuff 3 pounds of bologna in a 2 pound bag.
Which might be true, because I hear it's the shortest Marvel movie by runtime.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I don't know why they had to have all three in there. And I like Monica Rambeau. That's probably my favorite of the three characters.
Right.
Captain Marvel. I don't know. That's probably what she's called.
But she's in, I think right now in the comics, she's going by the name Photon.
Okay. So I'm not overly enthused. I don't even know if I will watch it in the theater, which would be like,
wow.
I'd be called a heretic.
That's a shocker.
Or a heathen or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if I'll go see it. Well, I mean, if you want to go see it, Joe, I'll go see it with you. But I just don't have a lot of excitement around it. What about you?
I think I liked the Captain Marvel movie significantly more than many people. But you can see I got my Captain Marvel poster right there behind me on the wall.
I see it. I see it.
Yes. I think I liked it significantly more than a lot of people did, because I kind of like that character. And I'm actually even more excited because WandaVision was one of my favorite shows. I've always liked Monica Rambeau as Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. like she was in the comics. We read Secret Wars with Michael, and she's the Captain Marvel in that one. And did you read the Blade books with me? Where
no.
There's a Black Panther. And I actually think because she has cool powers, and it's like it was a Black Panther. I think we did it Halloween last year. We were doing some vampire Marvel stuff, and Black Panther shows up in Louisiana, and Blade and all the vampire hunters are there, and the vampires are going to take over New Orleans, and the it's a 2-issue arc, and they wrap it with Black Panther calls Captain Marvel. You know, like, Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau. It's like, yeah, she can generate any light spectrum she wants. She just basically generates pure sunlight and blasts them with it.
So, I do. I like her power set. I like her in the comics.
And then I think with Ms. Marvel, I think that was aimed at a different audience. And it has been with the comics too, than my demographic, which is fine. I know my kids like it a lot. I'm with you. I'm not like rush out so excited, but I am enthusiastic and I'll see it opening weekend. And I have moderate hopes for it because I did like the first Captain Marvel movie so much.
Yeah, I'll probably go see it. And if we want, we should probably figure out when we want to go if you want to. But I guess I just have a hard time with the three characters in a 90-minute movie. Like right. How, and maybe it's because they all three, except for Monica Rambeau, but you kind of got the origin stories for two of them. So they don't really need to talk about that. And they're kind of quantum entangled or entwined. But Joe, I saw an updated movie poster and then I saw Nick Fury in one. And I'm like, so now you got four characters in this.
Four.
Like, now you're stuffing 4 pounds of bologna in a 2 pound bag.
I like I said, I will remain optimistic because it feels like just from the clips I've seen, it's like Nick Fury's a little bit more of the comic relief, almost like he was in the first Captain Marvel movie, where it's like Nick Fury was kind of an interesting dude because you never knew what was, you know, his eye getting scratched out. I want to see Goose again on the big screen.
Yep.
But I don't know. I'll be interested because it seems like they're bringing back the Accusers, and that Marvel outer space stuff outside of the Guardians of the Galaxy never really, I have some Nova comics from when I was growing up, but when Guardians of the Galaxy started doing the Nova Squad, I was like, don't care. Eternals, I was like, not as much. So I'm with you. It depends on how cosmic they go and how much they try and get into that.
Well, I will be, you upgraded me to cautiously optimistic. So we'll have to do a review on it here.
We will definitely do a review on it here because if it's not good, at least it's not 3 hours long.
That's right.
I mean,
it's not Killers of the Flower Moon. That's for sure.
No Martin Scorsese.
That's right.
Picture. I have seen people showing up to Killers of the Flower Moon with Marvel clothes on being like, check it out, Scorsese. I'm at your film, but I do like Marvel too.
That's right. That's you and me too. It's like, you can like both. It's not a choice. I did read a article. It tells you when you should go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it said for Killers of the Flower Moon, you can't. It said the movie is so plot thick and there's so many twists and turns. Like if you go at any point, you're going to miss something. I'm like, well, that's convenient. Thanks, Scorsese. Like you make it to where I can't pause a 3.5-hour movie.
Then they should put an intermission in it. They used to put intermissions in movies.
Just 5 minutes. That's all you need.
Used to do it all the time. Come on,
they did
man.
Used to do it all the time. It's like a 3-hour-plus movie with no intermission. And even the experts like, you cannot go to the bathroom at all. You'll miss something.
Well,
Michael, that's great.
I'm definitely going to watch it at home because sometimes I'll turn on my TV and be watching a movie and I'll be watching my headphones because at least I know I can walk in the bathroom and still hear the movie of what's going on.
Right. That's right.
I'm not missing any plot points right now.
That's right. Scorsese, Joe for the win.
All right. So I guess I will watch your movie in the bathroom, Martin Scorsese. That's the solution.
That's the takeaway, Joe. Good job.
All right. Well, we were going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about season 2 of Loki.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast, Superman service at bizarro prices.
And this is where I'm like woefully unprepared, because if I wasn't, I would have put in a sound clip from Loki there. But we can do the Loki voice. What is Tom Hiddleston? What's the classic Loki line, Mark? Give me any one.
I thought you were dead, brother.
There you go.
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
not please help.
And if it's all the same to you, I'll have that drink now.
I love it. That's a good one. All right. So, you know, we're a little bit behind.
By the way, sorry to interrupt. It made me think. Sorry, Joe. I watched a clip. I didn't know Tom Hiddleston does really good impressions.
Oh, really?
Like the actor. Yeah. There's a video out there of it. He does. He can't stop talking about the movie Heat, which I know you have a Heat. We got a whole side, but he's on the same panel with De Niro and he can't stop talking about Heat, and he does a Pacino impersonation and he does a De Niro impersonation, and he's really good at it. He does good impersonations. Yeah. So you should look it up. Yeah.
I will look it up. I don't want a sidebar, but if you get a chance, if you think that's funny, I'll watch that. I watched a, because Jeff Goldblum is tangentially related to the Marvel universe. You can watch it. It's Jeff Goldblum watching other people do impressions of him and him reacting to their impressions. Someone was like, that's really good. It's really good. He's like, and he just gets a kick out of the way some people exaggerate his features. I don't know.
Yeah, I will have to watch that. Yes.
All right, listeners, there's some things for you to go watch on YouTube in between episodes of Loki. So we've both watched, I've watched episodes 1 and 2. You've watched 1 because you're saving them up for the plane, which is understandable. You got to have something to watch on the plane.
It's like a nice filet mignon on the trip, nice choice meat.
You know, yes. I still haven't watched Secret Invasion. And I keep thinking I'm going to watch that on the plane and I never do.
That's okay. It's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. But
Marvel's redoing their whole studio operation for TV, which is probably a good idea. But Loki is back. Yes. And Loki was one of my, like if I rank the Marvel TV series, WandaVision is going to be number one. Hot second is Moon Knight. Very close. And Loki's up there. Loki's like one of the better.
Loki's number two for me behind WandaVision.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's because I really used to love Moon Knight, especially when he's in the West Coast Avengers and just walking.
Oh,
around
for
like
sure.
Broad daylight under palm trees.
Yes. And it was well acted and portrayed. And it's a good show. I just, we're splitting hairs in the top, I think, 5. Yeah. But that, yeah, definitely up there, Loki, season 1. And I'm glad they did a season 2. It's the only one that got a second season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's because it's tying into the broader, what they're trying to do with the multiverse, but also it was well received because it had a good blend of sci-fi, action, comedy. Like there was enough comedy in it that really made it work. And a lot of it was Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston.
Yes.
Playing off
very,
of each
very
other.
Good duo. Yes. Yep. And Sylvie. But yes, I agree that they make it work. And that was, I remember when I first got announced, I'm like, he's going to be Mobius, like that's weird, and he, it just worked. He's great. Yeah, that relationship on screen is really, really well done. There's a lot of chemistry there, a lot of good chemistry.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So season 1 ends with a giant cliffhanger. It like literally there was the choice for with He Who Remains, Loki, you and Sylvie take over and manage the sacred timeline. But if you kill me, there's just thousands of more coming to create chaos. And she chooses to kill him. And now they're living with the chaos. And the cliffhanger end of season 1 is Loki winds up back in the TVA, sees the statue of Kang, He Who Remains, turns to Mobius, and they have no clue who Loki is. And you're like, whoa, multiverse.
Yes.
What just happened? And this series picks up like a split second later, which is interesting. Where does Loki sit in the total MCU timeline? It's out of, is it in sync with, it feels like it's in sync with Multiverse of Madness, because there the multiverse is fracturing too, and it feels like it might, and it feels like Loki, like if you were thinking timeline, which is wonky with the TVA establishing a timeline, but it's happening almost a little bit contemporaneous this season, it feels like, with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Yeah, so I'm only one episode in, so you might have more insight there. If you remember at the beginning of season 1, it's the Loki from 2012 that gets the space stone kicked to him, and he leaves during that timeline. So
there's actually a very funny visual I saw online that charted Marvel movies. It's like every other Marvel movie. Either Loki dies or he steals the Tesseract.
Right. I didn't read that. I read an article about that. It was funny. But I think the timeline, because you don't know how long he was in the, when he got pruned, how long they were there. So that's what you don't know. But it starts with the timeline of this, I'll call it the sacred timeline of the first Battle of New York. So you just don't know how long season 1 continues. Then
what I read,
you got to think about that first. Then I don't think Kevin Feige has come out on this yet, but it's when He Who Remains does like the pauses, and he's like, it's begun already. People are saying, was it at that point that Scarlet Witch died? Was it at that point where the fractured timelines in No Way Home, Spider-Man began? Was it during Multiverse of Madness?
Like, I don't, they haven't come out and explain the timeline.
It feels like.
So I don't know is the long answer to the short answer to that long response.
And having watched a second episode, it doesn't make any difference. You know,
it doesn't.
There's no reveals that would help you place it. But it's interesting because you're right. The Loki that's in this is immediately the one who took the Tesseract
in the Battle of New York. So he was pre-Infinity War, pre-Thor Ragnarok.
Right. And he's a variant, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he's got the variant stuff on, because in the sacred timeline, he would have been pruned and it would have just, he wouldn't exist.
Right.
I don't know. Now it's making my head hurt.
but
in
that's what you don't know. It's like it started, the variant started at the Battle of New York in 2012.
Right. And in the sense that what's happening at the TVA, which you can't cleanly align to any timeline in the Marvel Universe, what's happening at the TVA end of season one is the timelines are fracturing and nobody's pruning them, which is what we see happening in Multiverse of Madness and what we see happening in No Way Home.
In No Way Home. Yeah. Yeah. Different No Way Home, different reasons, because it's the spell that creates the fracturing. But I think what they're trying to explain is they're all related.
I think they make a reference in there to something's happened that the barrier between the multiverses has been weakened.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. It's like a membrane thing or something. So I think you're right. I think season one spanned all the Marvel movies, if that makes sense, in terms of time. I think it sped all the way up to the fracturing with Multiverse of Madness, because that would make sense that the end of season one Loki is around the same time in the timeline, sacred timeline, is Multiverse of Madness.
Right. And the reason that it gets hard to place with the TVA is because this first scene in season two of Loki, it's not what I had expected, which is he's there and he's meeting Mobius and Mobius doesn't recognize him because he's in a different multiverse. It's because he's at the TVA at a different time where Mobius hasn't met him yet, because there's still the statue of Kang there. There's still all this stuff. So regardless of like where we're trying to pin it, this immediately starts with him time slipping all over. And he keeps showing up the TVA at different moments in time, where what meaning does time have within the TVA? Because I think one of the things they talk about here is we know that all the agents at the TVA have been plucked out of the timeline to work there. And somebody is continually erasing their memories over time. So they don't even know how long they've been there or what's going on. But
I know that's where it gets a little noodle bendery for me, is I thought time didn't function in the TVA, but Loki's able to span points in time in the TVA. So I'm like, well, I thought that didn't happen. And then maybe you can explain this to me, is why was he able to prune the wall to show what was behind it? I don't understand the logic behind that. Can you explain that to me? That was my one question.
There's two leaps there, which is number one, we've never seen that baton be able to like disintegrate matter.
Right.
And so he hits the wall and it disintegrates that layer and reveals that behind that layer are these frescoes of the different Kangs who we know now runs the TVA, created the TVA, and there's these Kangs that look like they're from different periods of history there. But also, like, if for some reason they're like, whatever happened and he who remains has pruned all the other timelines and he's like, I'm here and I don't want anybody to find out about me, he just like built like, so he just put some drywall over it. It's like, tear it down or something. Just like a thin layer of gabardine is all that's separating you and
that. But how did Loki know to use the stick to melt the facade?
That's the weird part. I get that Loki saw that thing was there on the wall, and now he's seeing there's a wall in front of it. But how did he know? Like, because we've never seen that baton be like, oh yeah, in addition to pruning variants, this baton also has the power to disintegrate normal matter. I don't know.
Yeah. Because it did. It kind of melted it away, because he stopped pruning once it became big enough.
Right. It's ultra convenient to not have to introduce another thing that disintegrates stuff. So like, oh yeah, it does this too. And disintegrates the wall.
But I don't understand what it did. What did it disintegrate?
Like I said,
timeline?
No, I think it was just like, oh yeah. And in addition to pruning variants, it like disintegrates stuff that it touches. I don't think it was a time thing. I think it was just supposed to be disintegrating the wall.
So it's like a rod of elimination?
Yeah.
Or a sphere of annihilation in reverse?
I mean, I guess you could touch anything with it and it would disintegrate, not just variants.
Okay, that's your point. But I still don't understand how he knew to... Assuming right? He knew that's what the stick did, how did he know to do that to the wall and something was going to be behind it?
Well, maybe it ties into one of my favorite parts of the episode is maybe he's the only person who read the TVA handbook.
Right. Exists. And maybe you're right. By the way, we're I'm sorry for going down a rabbit hole for the listeners, but I'm really excited about the season and the introduction of the new character is awesome.
Yeah.
The guy that plays it. Data from Goonies, I can't remember his name, but he was he was in Everything Everywhere All at Once. He's great in it. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but I'm really excited about
that's like my favorite piece, which is a way to get a ton of exposition out of the way in a fun manner, because really the first 10 minutes of the episode is just like Loki running around continually time slipping, which looks weird. I don't know what that visual effect is, but I love it when he's talking to Mobius about it. He's like does it look bad? And he's like, no, it does look bad, it looks horrifying.
that's right.
He's like, I can't stomach it. And then like he's getting chased around, like for the first 10 minutes he's just getting chased around, and then he jumps out the window Fifth Element style.
I was gonna say onto the floating car, taxi car, and crashes into the wall, and gosh. Yeah,
but then like the TVA is freaking out, but they're like, we're gonna go see Ouroboros, who they just call him OB. And they stop down there. He like does a lot of the tech, and that guy who's Kiwe Kwan, he like has this uncanny ability to make things seem like ultra serious, grave, and then lighthearted, funny, and then super serious again, like in the span of like 15 seconds or two lines. Like he's like, yeah, it's kind of funny, but this is the most serious thing you've ever heard in your life, but it's kind of funny still.
Yes.
And I think you nailed it. That's what makes the character so engaging.
And this is the one part I liked, which is apparently now Marvel Universe time travel follows Bill and Ted rules, which is the only way to get him to stop time slipping is to have this device that OB's like, yeah, but it doesn't exist. It would take forever to build. And so Loki, when he time slips back in time, says, hey, you need to build this thing. And then when Loki pops back into the future, he's like, oh, look, here it is.
It goes against what they already established as time travel. And there were some critics that knocked it, but I'm like, but you don't understand. They're in the TVA. Marvel can do whatever they want because the time works differently. They already established that.
Right.
So it works like Bill and Ted, like you said, but there are a lot of great scenes in that episode one. My other one was where there was a little crack on his thing and he takes the tape and tapes it up. And he's like, there you go. That should be fine.
should be good.
But you're right. It's like, you have to make sure you do this when this turns green. Okay, good luck. Have fun.
Right.
The graveness of it and then the lightheartedness. You're right. You nailed it. He does that so beautifully done, beautifully acted. I love it.
Yeah. He's like that would never work. That it would take decades to build a machine like the one you're talking about. And then Loki pops in and he's like, oh, and here it is.
Here it is. I got it.
I
remember somebody telling me about this.
Because you don't know how far back in time that was and or whether he had his mind wiped in between.
Right.
But he seems to be the one person who does retain memories longer than anybody else. But like when those
Protagonist.
Three characters.
Protagonist.
So then there's some stuff about this temporal loom that's weaving the timeline together that seemed to be, the MacGuffin of the episode.
They had to figure out a way for him to get unslippage,
which was the thing. Maybe you can explain to me is that he had to do the thing, he had to go, and then when he time slipped, he had to prune himself, right? And so he goes and he sees Sylvie, and he's running through like an abandoned TVA that seems to be far future, maybe TVA.
Well, that's episode two.
I think it happens at the end of episode one.
At the end of episode. Oh, okay. She's in the McDonald's.
Right. And before that, she looks out through the elevator doors and the phone's ringing mysteriously. There's a phone ringing mysteriously. Yep. I still didn't get that, but she opens the doors and she sees him, but he's got to prune himself to unstick himself from time.
Yeah. I watched the last 15 minutes of that episode twice, to your point. And I put the second time I put on captions because I'm like, what did I miss? And I'm still confused.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of whatever you want to call them, MacGuffins or tricks at the end of that. I'm like, why is the phone ringing? Because they're really zooming in on it like it's super important. And then she's trying to get out of the elevator. And then all of a sudden we see her in a McDonald's in the 80s. And I'm like, but what? It's got to make sense later, right? They got to come back to that sequence,
right,
of who is calling them, because it's probably one of them trying to get a hold of themselves, maybe. That's my guess.
Yeah, probably.
But I don't know. They got to come back to that, because why would they? It's only 35 minutes. Like, you can't waste a lot of time, pun intended, right, on things like a phone ringing. Like, they spent a good 10 seconds on that scene. That was my point. Like, so you're right. There's some importance there, I think, down the road, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah. We'll see. And so did you get the Broxton, Oklahoma reference at the end with her being in Oklahoma?
Well, is that because that was where she's from?
There's a Marvel series. It was probably Thor when you and I worked together at the bank. And it was Thor at that time had transported part of Asgard to Broxton, Oklahoma, and it hovered above the ground. And that's where Asgard was. So it's just a nod.
I knew there was some reference. Yeah.
This is a nod to the comics there. But overall, good episode. I really liked it. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. Any other scenes stick out to you? There were a couple funny moments, I thought. And it goes back to the character.
Like you said, the blend of the characters and the blend of action and sci-fi, like the big suit he had to put on and to go out into the loom. Like I it was a very good mix of costumes and sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like the first season. So yeah, good mix there.
I loved it. I think my favorite moment in the film, the most Loki moment in the film, is when he's explaining to Mobius what happened. And he's like, so you guys got in a fight and she won? And he's like, well, it was a draw. And then he's like, so you kicked her through a time door also?
That's right. Yes. I love those little, like, their exchanges are priceless. They're really good. They're really fun.
That was good. All right. Well, that's what we know about Loki. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I'm looking forward to reading and finding out what's more in that little TVA handbook that only like one person seems to have possibly read.
It's out for Miss Minutes.
TVA. Oh, yeah. And Miss Minutes is gone. Where's right. She needs to come back too.
And she was at the end of Loki season one. She was like the herald of He Who Remains, right? She was like some kind of a silver surfer for Kang.
Yeah. She's his herald.
Ravona?
And we know that we'll see coming up, because the stinger at the end of, I forget which movie it was, the Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania, where Victor Timely. So we know that's coming, because there's Mobius and Loki seeing Victor Timely. We know that's coming. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes for them to introduce Kang and where this goes and how it all fits in. But awesome. I'm really looking forward to watching the rest of the series. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we got a couple comic books to discuss, starting with Werewolf by Night one-shot. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Wow, that sounds terrible when you say it out loud.
Hey, welcome back. We are talking a couple comics now. Werewolf by Night, number one, the one shot that came out. And I did a lot of work to write down who the creative teams on these books were, and then I'll look at it over here. It's on my notes instead of trying to look it up in the book. This is
Fran Gallon,
an unholy alliance in the shadows of Black and White Night. Jack Russell races to halt the sacrifice of a young girl at the hand of monsters. Elsa Bloodstone and all her colorful monster hunting glory isn't far behind, but can they put their differences aside long enough to save the day? And what would such a partnership even look like? So this follows to, like, I think Werewolf by Night was a moderately successful show for Disney Plus.
Enjoyed it. Yep.
And, you know, take advantage of it. It's coming up on Halloween again. Let's revisit some of the characters that were introduced there. Jack Russell, who is the Werewolf by Night. I still love that they named him Jack Russell, like the dog. And Elsa Bloodstone from the Bloodstone family. And this is, it's an interesting book because it's just a one shot. It's going to tell another story of these two, Elsa, Monster Hunter, Jack, Werewolf by Night. What were your impressions of the book first off, Mark?
Well, as you know, I'm not a big fan of Werewolf by Night, and I think it's because it was too scary for me growing up, is the honest answer, but I never got into it. And then you wanted me to watch, and I was intrigued by the special presentation of Marvel Werewolf by Night. And we talked about this in a previous pod, but I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that you had me watch it. I'm glad that we reviewed it. And so I was looking forward to this when you gave me one book to read. You said, well, if you can read the second one. And then when you told me what it was, I'm like, oh, I'm totally reading it.
Nice.
And overall, I loved it. And we can get into it, but it helped me enjoy it more. Mm-hmm. That I watched the special presentation.
Yeah.
Again, somebody coming in cold, completely cold, not knowing a lot about Elsa or Jack or that whole universe, I'll call it, of monsters. I really enjoyed it, Joe.
Good. Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
I liked it. It's first off, I think the story is told in a really interesting way visually.
Yes.
Because Werewolf by Night, the TV series, was very stylized with its use of black and white. It's a very selective use of color. And you get a world in which the Werewolf by Night and the dark horror type stuff is still illustrated mostly in black and white and shades of gray. But Elsa Bloodstone in her whole world is these bright, vibrant colors.
Yes.
And I love her in her personality. She says, like, the book is very much about the contrast between the two and the way they live. And although they're intertwined romantically in a lot of ways, this book is all compare and contrast the two characters and how they act and how they feel and how they even look, which I really like, because, you know, Werewolf by Night, he's scary, fighting shadow creatures. And then Elsa Bloodstone, she's like, what do you want? I'm a redhead who wears orange. I guess I'm a little conspicuous, right?
Right, right. I love that line. But yeah, I love the colors in this book. It might just be the fact that I'm older and need readers, but I think what I really enjoyed about the black and white elements is they even kind of smudge or blur some of the black and white in there. Especially some of the gorier parts, and it was a really visually pleasing book to me, and so that was a big part of it. And I also wrote down, it's the team up I didn't know I needed but always wanted with right? Elsa and Jack. Like, it's great. It's a great team up, Jack.
I
must have been missing out forever.
I think some of the best Marvel comics wind up being that. It's like the interplay of the two characters off each other. So in the book, they have the same goal. There's this evil necromantic, I think is his name.
Yeah.
And he is reanimating these shadow creatures. And Jack knows about it because a girl has been kidnapped for this sacrifice in the town. And he's met the family. And he's like, I'm going to go rescue her. Elsa has heard about it through other channels of just her being a monster hunter. And they converge on the scene of the crime. The same time, and they're like, time for a team up. Get the band back together. and I love even the way that they are their own internal monologue and narrative is parallel to each other, but it's like how they're seeing each other. And he's all like, you know, it's like she gets away with a lot because she's good looking, and maybe I let her get away with a lot because she's good looking, and then like her parallel bubble is like, he smells like a dog.
Right, exactly. but and they have this mutual respect for each other because they're in the same line of work, I guess is the best way to talk about it, right? So it's like, and it's a very unique line of work, and they're like, well, she gets me or he gets me because we're in the same line of work. Even though we're completely different types of people, we still have the same line of work, and so we can relate that way. And so it's a great team up. It was the interaction we just talked about with Mobius and Loki, same thing here. It's a team up you never knew you wanted, but you really get, and it's very enjoyable.
Yeah, the art's really dynamic. You know, I don't want to. It's interesting as you and I are navigating our way on comic reviews, like to not just give a straight plot recap, because a straight plot recap is going to give away everything. And this is definitely a book that is worth reading, because it feels very much like it like you said, if you've watched Werewolf by Night and you're like, I would like to see another adventure of these two characters, you could almost say, like, literally this is what happened a year later. 1 year later, you know, they know, they've gotten to know each other, they've gone their separate ways because they do have their own separate lines of work. And it's interesting because they do draw the parallels of they're the same but very different because of their approach and attitude towards it, where his is very dark and very punishing of himself, always feeling like he deserves bad things to happen to him. And she's just very like, shrug it off. These are the kind of things that happen. And oh, well, next job up, where he carries things with him with a heavy heart. And I don't know if that's more behind the character or not more behind the character, but that's fascinating to me.
The two things I also wrote down that I find interesting over and above the great team up, which I can't stress enough. And I think you said it well, Joe, if for those listening, watch the special presentation, you should pick up this book and read it. I mean, it's a great follow-up. I wrote down, you know, it's a classic evil turns upon itself theme in the one shot.
Yeah.
So without spoiling anything. So I wrote down the non-spoiler one liner, which is, you know, it's the classic good versus evil. And this is, you know, my Bobby Mumfrey cockeyed optimist thing, but I always think good will prevail because evil does always turn upon itself. And so that theme comes out in the book. And, if you're okay with, questionable happy endings,
yeah,
this is another good book. Like, you could look at this subjectively and be like, oh, that was a, like, they quote unquote won. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it didn't, but objectively you could be like, they didn't actually win.
Right.
Like he didn't get the girl or save the day. And it's like, there's another way to look at this, but you still come away kind of like, oh, they actually won. It's like, but did they?
It's the duality, because I think the two characters walk away at the end, one of them feeling mission accomplished and the other one feeling, again, giant letdown.
Like they failed.
We didn't. So.
Right. It's good. I enjoyed it. Thank you for recommending.
Well, highly recommended if you've watched Werewolf by Night, and if you liked it and you just want to see something that, like, literally they could take this and turn it into another hour special and it would feel like just Werewolf by Night 2. So
yes,
loved it. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about our other spooky story, Spine-Tingling Spider-Man number 1.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Wow, that sounds terrible when you say it out loud.
Oh, I already played that one. I meant to play this one.
Oh.
The Casual Comics Cast is a buffet line of humiliation. Everybody gets a plate.
I love those. Jeff does such a good job recording this.
He does.
So this is Spine-Tingling Spider-Man number 1. This just came out last week, and I grabbed it, and that was when I said, hey, Mark, we've been talking about Loki. Let me drop this book off for you, because I didn't know what to expect. I just saw the cover. I know it's almost Halloween, Spine-Tingling Spider-Man. This is by Saladin Ahmed and Juan Ferreira. Terror continues for the web-slinger. After a fight with Spider-Side, Spider-Man gets taken on the most terrifying ride of his life. If you think you've already read the scariest Spider-Man story ever, you may stand corrected after this one. They write the cheesiest solicitations for these books. But it says it says right on the cover, scariest Marvel book ever. Right on the cover.
Smack dab on the cover.
So I saw it. The art looked pretty. The cover is just amazing looking. And I mean, if you think about it, I mean, because there's creepy looking spiders and spider webs behind him. That's kind of Halloweenish, like spiders in general. You know, like Spider-Man, you kind of think of happy-go-lucky, but there's a lot of creepy stuff about spiders. And I guess that was their intention, is let's write a scary Spider-Man story. And as I was checking out at Legend Comics, I was like, ooh, I can't wait till you read this. Cause he's like, I thought it was really good. So he gave it a big thumbs up. And I didn't know what to, like, if you see this and be like, the scariest Marvel book ever, I never envisioned, hey, they should make a scary Spider-Man story. I mean, you've been reading Spider-Man for a long time. Have they done anything like remotely scary Spider-Man?
No, they haven't. I think this is more horror like vibes. So definitely that. Of course, it seems like every time I come on the podcast, I talk about my favorite series with Kraven. That was probably the scariest, but that was more dark. It wasn't scary. It was like, where was Spider-Man? And obviously he was buried alive in that, spoiler alert, 40 years later. But it wasn't horror vibes like that. I would say this is the scariest Spider-Man book ever. I don't know about the scariest Marvel book ever.
to me, the other series that comes to mind is when that family of like vampire type creatures was feeding off of animal totems from across the multiverse and was hunting Spider-Man, like, to drain him of his power. And he kept trying to get away. But this book, first off, it opens exactly like the solicit says, with him fighting Spider-Side. Like, do you know anything about Spider-Side as a character?
I have no idea. No, I don't. I do not at all. Or if I did, I forgot. So that
looks pretty scary.
He does. I mean, he's got a big mouth and
Yeah. It's a pretty scary opening.
Yeah. And he's like fighting this dude that I didn't know anything about. And I'm looking up Spider-Side now, and it looks like Spider-Side as a character. Oh my goodness, Mark. It's going to go back to this clones.
It is. It's a shape-changing homicidal maniac who was cloned from Peter Parker.
I have the power grid from Marvel.com.
On Spider-Side?
Yeah, power grid. Intelligence 4, strength 4, speed 3, durability 4, energy projection 1, fighting skills 4. So, I mean, he's pretty tough.
Is that out of 5?
Yeah, I think it is. It says Spider-Side can, at his peak, lift approximately 10 tons. Advanced musculature. Nice. Superhuman.
By the way, since you're bringing up power grid, Joe, I did search Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Can he crawl? And he has the ability to cling to surfaces through microscopic suction cups located on the pads of his hands and feet.
Ooh. So
you are correct, sir.
The walls.
I feel like Nightcrawler, you better crawl.
Right. Unless you're going to like worm and tunnel underground.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But yeah, he can stick to walls, so that would be a good costume for him to wear.
Yeah, so maybe we'll read Uncanny Spider-Man and see why he's doing this. It also says that Spider-Side has shape alteration powers, but
yes, he's shape changing. Why? It seems he can take any shape he wants, and he looks just like Spider-Man with a big mouth.
Okay, it's weird. Did my camera just shut off?
Your camera just shut off. Yes, I see your.
All right. I don't know. I'll see if I can figure that out while we go. But
spine tingling. Now it's back. Spider tingle, not spider tingle, but spine tingling Spider-Man.
But the first thing I noticed about this book is, again, it's almost like reading this back to back with Werewolf by Night. You're seeing some really cool stylized art.
Yeah, like, I agree.
The guy who's drawing this is just incredible. And he's got some cool like I thought I had seen every single pose Spider-Man could be in while fighting. But this guy comes up with even some more dynamic, cool visuals of Spider-Man's acrobatic fighting ability.
That's a good call out, Joe. I didn't know what I liked about the first few pages. I'm like, this is really fun to read. And that's it. You nailed it. That's what it was.
You've got like a 2-page splash that starts it off. That is just the battle of Spider-Man and Spider-Side across the city. And it's like super dynamic, ton of motion to it. And again, like I don't know that I've ever seen. You know, there's a lot of iconic ways that you see Spider-Man swing and jump, but the way that his acrobatics are displayed here just takes it to another level completely. And in addition to a thwip, you get a slorch.
I saw that. I wrote that down too, Joe. I'm like, hey, you get a thwip and a slorch. And I also love with Spider-Man and how different artists render him with how much I always look at the eyes. Like, how do they do the eyes? And I really like how this artist does Spider-Man. I mean, it's similar to the Maniac guy, but I like the little edges on him. It's very modern, and I like it. So I, you know, well done on his part or her part.
It's very, very super angular, too. And the coloring on the book is great. And as I'm reading that double page and, like, the fight with Spider-Side, that's why fight does end. And I'm like, well, is that what's supposed to be scary about the book? And then, like, well, I don't want to give spoilers, so we put in the plot. What happens next is actually probably, I think, one of the scariest things that could happen to him, which is he wakes up and no one knows who he is. Like, he's like, I live here. And the cops are like, you don't live here. Get out of here. And he's like, why is none of my stuff here? And he calls Aunt May, and Aunt May's like, I don't have a nephew, Peter. And he tries to see MJ.
Me. Yeah.
Right.
Definite Twilight Zone vibes. You know that one Twilight Zone where you're the same and all the ones different? They're all like that. But yeah, I wrote Twilight Zone vibes, which is a great fallback for a scary story of like, did you feel alone and isolated like him? And they make you really feel that in the book.
Yeah, because he's like lost everything. And then he's like stripped of everything, all of his support system. Which, you know, Spider-Man, his amazing pals are a big part of his life. His the people that he knows. Right. His powers are stripped
away. The reason
why
he fights. I mean, you have to, he does it for these people, but he does it for everybody. I mean, you need to have a specific reason, and it's Aunt May and MJ is why he does all this stuff. And now they're gone. And the foreshadowing is interesting. Like right before he goes to bed, he's like, well, people have it worse than me. I should say I'm blessed, right? So he's thanking himself for everything. And then all of a sudden it's all gone.
Yeah, which is rare in his life. What he's talking about, he's like, normally I just think it's the Parker curse, but you know what? When I think about it, being Peter Parker is not so bad. And then now nobody knows who Peter Parker is.
Right. Twilight Zone. Here we go.
And so he's stripped of everything, including his powers.
Including his powers, yeah. That nobody was a good knows twist. Who he I like is. That.
And you can start to sense the fear building up in him of, I don't know where I am. I don't know what's going on. And it peaks then with a text message saying, if you want your life back, come to the train station.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Crazy.
And he's starting to feel because he gets hurt trying to figure out that he didn't have powers. And so the fear is building up because the pain isn't going away.
Right.
Which I think is interesting. He's like, is this what normal people feel like when they're alone and they're hurt and they feel powerless? Like, this is not good.
Yeah, because I mean, really, he was kind of that teenager who was lonely. So, but if you think about classic Peter Parker, he was a nerd when he didn't have powers, but at least he had his friends. He had people who liked him, people who were friends with him and stuff like that. Then he becomes Spider-Man. And since that point, he's probably rarely had minor things like cause him physical injury. Like he says it. He's like, normally I could just shrug something like this off. I forgot what it's like to feel this. And it's this building sense of dread. And then it gets worse. I don't want to say how,
that's right.
It gets worse. That is then the hook to the rest of the series, which is kind of cool.
And that's where I agree, Joe. And that's where, in terms of scariest Spider-Man book ever, the visuals, without giving it away, the pigs at the dinner table, the severed limbs, it really is a horror book for Spider-Man. And I thought they nailed it. It makes you feel alone and desperate with him along the way with the visuals at the middle and the end of the book there. And it was one of those where, I don't know if you ever get this in some of these comics, like you get to the last page and then you realize you're at the last page and you get kind of bummed. You're like, what? Yeah. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so it's like a good show or a movie. It goes by so fast. And that's what this book did it for me.
Things just got interesting. It is that. And you're right. It was, I got to the last page. I'm like, that's the last page. Come on. Where's the rest? Where's more? And I think I haven't felt that way about a comic in a long time, where it surprised me to the point, I'm like, but where is the rest?
Gotta, that's right.
Figure out what's going on here, because he's in a bad place. He's in a place he's never been before in his life. And I can't think of 60, what is it? 60 years of Spider-Man? 50 years? 60?
Well, 1963.
So 60 years of Spider-Man this year.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a book like this of Spider-Man where it's genuinely creepy and scary.
He's lost other people, but he hasn't lost everything. But it's not that everything, like Aunt May didn't die. They just he's in the Twilight Zone,
and it's like
he's just alone.
You think about some of the things you see with multiverse and stuff like that, where it's like, you know, slip, you're in a different part of the whatever. But this is, there's obviously supernatural forces that are doing this to him intentionally, and he can't just fight his way out of it like he normally would. Right. And he tries to call the Avengers and they're like, sorry, you don't have access to that number, right? Because he's just another dude. Can't
which
call.
It's interesting that he still has his phone,
right
when he wakes up. But that's just probably part of the hook. But I'm with you. I need to read the second episode or the second book.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you, man. Well, I'm glad you liked it, because it was one that, like, I feel like I have a decent sense of, hey, Mark would be interested in this, especially like the Spider-Man stuff, because sometimes you pick up a new Spider-Man thing and you're like, I've kind of seen this kind of thing before, and it was done better here, done better there, but nothing's been done like this before. And so I am super recommending it to anybody who's a Spider-Man fan and who has interest in seeing that kind of mashup.
Yep. And by the way, real quick, shout out to you, Joe. Thank you for dropping off those books at the security desk at my work. Little follow-up anecdote. So I went down to pick them up and I said, hey, you know, I'm Mark, I'm here to pick up. And she hands it to me and she goes, and I kind of gave her that look like, you know, yeah, I know they're comic books, but she goes, I looked at what was in there and I kind of want to read them. She told me that. The security guard. I go, well, I would let you read them, but I still need to read them first. I go, do you want me to bring them back? And she's like, would you?
Yeah.
And well, so I think I should, do you think I should bring them back to her and let her read them? Like,
I think you should. And then she should come on the podcast. That's what she thought about.
I think she should. I was going to tell her that.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, I looked what's in there and I kind of want to read it. I kind of wanted to read what I'm giving you. And I said, oh, well, maybe I'll give them back to you.
Yeah.
And she goes, you for real? And I go, well, like maybe I wanted to ask you first. I go, well, they're not mine. I go, I got them from somebody.
No,
I go,
I'll ask them. I have my own copies. Those are yours to do whatever you want with them.
Well, then I'm going to let her borrow them and see if she wants to be on the podcast.
Yeah. Or at least record a little clip.
Or record, yeah, or do something. But she was into it, Jerry. Or he was into it, Jerry.
I know, I get it. I walked in to a place of business. That's a very serious place of business. And I'm in my shorts and like a zip up. And I walk in with just a bag that's got a post-it note with your name on it. I'm like, I need to leave these for Mark. And she's like, he needs to come down and get or meet you. Have you called him? I'm like, I texted him and he said he's on a call right now and he can't come down. And she's like, I'm not supposed to do this. And I was like,
right.
Okay. She's like, but go ahead. And then I left it there. And I'm like, do you need his name? Do you want to send him an email or anything? She goes, no, his name's right there on the post-it note.
Thanks for putting that post-it note, Joe. She was interested in the comics because she
which I can imagine that I walked out and she's like, yeah. I better look in here and see if this is anthrax or something.
I appreciate her doing that. So I appreciate her doing that. And she wanted to keep them.
Yeah.
She wanted to read the books. So I'm going to take them back tomorrow and let her read them and say, if you'd like to record a little clip, Joe and I do a podcast. And if you want to give us your opinion on these books, we'd love to have you on there.
We'll
so yeah, like, I thought you might like that little anecdote because you were a little wondering, like, is she even going to give him these? Like, what? Because you texted me like, I'm not so sure.
I knew she would. And I knew she was doing her job, and that's the right thing to do at a place of business like that when somebody strange walks in, right? But I thought she would email you or like try and whatever and be like, hey, there's this for you. Is it legit or not? But
yeah, and I should have emailed. That was my fault. I should have emailed security and told them, because that's when people stop by. I'm supposed to tell them, like, hey, this guy's dropping something off. But again, you must have seemed like a harmless guy and you're just dropping off a bag. And she looked at it anyway. So
I'm just like a fat old dude. She's like, you can't be that much trouble. She's like, I'm going to look in the bag. And if it's a problem, I'm going to chase him down and beat him.
Right. There's security footage. We should get to the footage. We should put that on your blog or something, like footage of you walking.
Yeah, I'd love to see her eyeing me all the way out the door and watching, assessing the threat level. It's an ocular pat down.
Yes. But I love the fact that she
said
something, because not everybody says things to people. And I appreciated her saying, I kind of want to read them. And I thought that was really curious. And I like curiosity.
Yeah. And I'm thrilled that it's like, because it used to be, you know, I remember the day where you tried to hand somebody a comic book and they're like, get out of here, nerd, or whatever.
Right.
And now it's just like totally, I mean, I don't want to say normal because everybody's got that, but like somebody who's just like, you run into them randomly, she's doing her job, she's sitting at her desk, she sees a couple comic books and she's like, you know, I'd be interested to read those. I think that's really cool that the culture has come and it's
normalized the comic books, which, you know, it when you and I were growing up, it wasn't normal, which was sad. But now it's, I think given, for a lot of people, it's given its proper place in terms of art and story and everything else. So that's why we read them, and for the fun. Well, that's why it's called a comic book.
If we can spread the word and you know, I hope she reads them, and I hope that she gets as much of a kick out of them as we did.
I'm going to drop them off to her tomorrow, Joe. I'm going to tell her tomorrow. So,
well, we'll get a report back next time you're on. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll wrap, but we will be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We're not done until one of us can't get up.
Which is going to be soon for me.
That's right.
Long I think day. I've been sitting in my chair all day, which is not super. But no, thanks for joining me. So, you know, I think to wrap, Loki, good. Werewolf by Night, good. Spider-Man, good. It's like,
good.
It's like that episode of
Trifecta.
Friends.
Good.
Good. Me, good. Good.
That's right. It was the Joe trifecta today. Nice work, Joe. The two books and Loki, I can't wait.
Okay, well, I think I've built up some goodwill then for when we go see the Marvels.
That's right.
Give me a little bit of a pass.
You have plenty of in the point bank there, so we're good. It can be terrible and you'll be fine. So I'm fine.
All right, Mark. Well, it was great to catch up with you and talk some books. And it will probably, the next time that you and I will chat, it will be Marvels probably. So we'll see
absolutely.
If we can find something interesting. Maybe we'll go back to first appearance of Monica Rambeau in the comics and see what that's all about. So
I like it. I like the callback.
Nice. So join us soon, people. We will talk to you later.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.